Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. Today, it's potpourri, loosely connected this and that with chat from me, music by David Rovics, satire by The Final Edition, and more. I hope you'll stay tuned. This week is another potpourri show. Potpourri number 4. Potpourri sounds better than hodgepodge, which means the same thing. We feature a bit of this and a bit of that, loosely connected by the theme of the little guy versus the system. Or if the little guy sounds too sexist, too androcentric, we could say the 99% versus the 1%. Loosely connected by that theme, but only loosely. We'll hear some chat from me, new music by David Rovics, and this and that. In a few minutes, I want to chat a bit about Mr. Donald Trump. Now don't touch that dial. I promise that what I will say is quite different than what was said in the last 400 commentaries you've read and heard on Trump. That's an easy promise to keep, because the last 400 commentaries all said pretty much the same thing, right? Saying something different is pretty easy. You gotta wonder why so few people have done it. But before that, I've got a recording I love that I was never able to fit into the show. It's a very funny public service announcement about using energy wisely and protecting the environment. A public service announcement sponsored by the Koch brothers. Well, not actually. It's actually satire by the comedy group The Final Edition. Well, worth a listen. Here goes.
This portion of the Final Edition Radio Hour is brought to you by the Oil is Green Foundation.
Why do we hate oil so? Why do we blame oil for global warming, the pollution of our air and seas, the death of millions of species? Oil is not our enemy. Oil is a child of Mother Earth. Oil is numberless trillions of trees, shrubs, plants, flowers, fruits, grains, and as many species of birds, reptiles, mammals, living organisms, large and small, all totally organic, every single cell of which passed away of natural causes. Gently compressed by organic, natural processes, oil ages deep in the bosom of Mother Earth for millions and millions of years. Like the finest wine in a vast underground cellar, it matures into thick, luscious, darkly shining, nutrient-rich, intensely concentrated earth juice. Oil is the blood that flows through our planet's hearts and veins. Oil is the essence of life. So let's stop wasting our time and money on unreliable, renewable energy. Stop destroying America's purpled majesty with ugly wind and solar farms. Stop turning her amber waves of grain into useless ethanol instead of feeding a hungry planet. And thank Mother Earth for oil, the greenest of all her children.
This has been a message from Koch Industries Oil and Gas Division.
Things go better with Koch.
Some funny satire by The Final Edition. That recording is courtesy of Scooter of the Inner Side out in Houston. Thanks once again. Now on to Trump. As promised, I'm going to say something different from the last 400 discussions of Trump that you've sat through. I'm not going to criticize Trump. Instead, I want to explore how current events involving Trump show the god-awful corruption of the system. They also show the god-awful corruption of the corporate-controlled so-called mainstream news media. and they show how, in America today, democracy is more pretty fiction than reality. That's the interesting story connected to Trump. And it's a story we've experienced before, whenever an insurgent challenges the powers that be. We could go back to Eugene V. Debs, but we've seen the story more recently with, say, Ross Perot, Dennis Kucinich, Ralph Nader, and even as we speak, Bernie Sanders. We saw it with the Occupy movement. So the interesting story here is not the badness of Donald Trump's character and policies and beliefs. That's too obvious to be interesting. No, to me, the interesting story is the system's reaction to Trump. And that reaction reveals how corrupt the system actually is. That's the story here. So I think Donald Trump is doing America a favor by revealing how corrupt and anti-democratic the system actually is, especially the media. I'm not going to go into Trump's own vices and follies here. I'm not going to deplore Trump's own lack of judgment, knowledge, wit, and taste. That's how people used to talk back in Jonathan Swift's day, back in the early 18th century. Trump's want of judgment, knowledge, wit, and taste. I will grant that Trump is deficient in all four and well-stocked in folly. I won't belabor the point because the entire U.S. media have been beating this drum. Beating the drum in unison, without pause, day after day, month after month after month. That's what caught my attention. The unison of all these media voices. Diversity of opinion? Forget it. Instead, a constant, unending refrain of Trump is a fool, Trump is a menace, the Republican establishment must find a way to stop Trump, and democracy be damned. If the powers that be cannot stop Trump, then the voters must. The same message, over and over and over again, every day, filling the editorial pages of all the newspapers, and all the news pages, too. The newspapers and the thoughtful magazines are all on the same page here. Even the mostly apolitical magazine, The New Yorker. The New Yorker, famous for its fine writing, famous for its excellent long-form journalism, and for its terrific droll cartoons. I'm just browsing through a stack of recent issues here. I see anti-Trump cover illustrations on the issues of February 1 and May 23, 2016. In The New Yorker's issue of April 25, every single cartoon is about Trump and against Trump. 17 cartoons, every one of them on the theme of how awful Donald Trump is. I have read The New Yorker for decades, and I do not recall ever seeing anything like this before. As far as I recall, The New Yorker has satirized no other presidential candidate in this election cycle. Again, I have no love for Donald Trump, but let me say just three words. George W. Bush. In mine considered judgment, George W. Bush is a warmonger, a psychopath, an ignoramus, a liar, a religious hypocrite, and a despiser of the Bill of Rights. He is also a loyal and, for a while, effective servant of Wall Street, servant of the Fortune 500, of the so-called defense industry, and of the national security state. Just to recite a few highlights of his presidency. He allowed 9/11 to happen and did not even fire anybody when it did. And he actively resisted forming a commission to investigate afterwards. He allowed New Orleans to be drowned and praised his appointed Director of Emergency Management afterwards. Attaboy, Brownie! Anybody remember New Orleans? George W. Bush placed U.S. foreign policy entirely into the hands of right-wing neocon crazies. He started two obscene, entirely needless, and ruinously expensive wars. Wars which, by the way, are still being fought. He destabilized the entire Middle East. He cut taxes for the corporations, he cut taxes for the rich, and he cut services for the rest of us. There's much more, but I'll stop here. All the while, the U.S. corporate-controlled media were entirely behind George W. Bush. Always talking about how presidential he was acting, always talking about how he was growing in office. The media did everything they could to overlook his crimes, past and present. The media denigrated and mocked his political opponents. Senator Al Gore in 2000, Senator John Kerry in 2004. The media chose to overlook the fact that Bush was not elected to office, but was installed in a post-election coup. Installed by five right-wingers on the Supreme Court. You may or may not recall, the court halted Florida's vote recount in 2000 when it became apparent that Al Gore had won Florida. Hence, Al Gore had won the presidency. In fact, a recount, which didn't count, demonstrated that Al Gore did win Florida and was elected president. Gore was elected, but Bush was installed. There's a name for a sequence of events like this, and the name is coup. The American media had no trouble with the coup, no trouble whitewashing and praising George W. Bush. That's because Bush was a proven member of and servant of the establishment. Bush could be depended on to fight for the interests of the oligarchs. So could Al Gore, by the way, and so can Hillary Clinton. But I digress. George W. Bush is an ignoramus who effectively championed many destructive policies. Saint Ronald Reagan was an ignoramus, suffering from senile dementia through most of his presidency, who championed many destructive policies. To be sure, neither was a total ignoramus. They were both highly skilled in the craft of American political maneuvering, as is Donald Trump. Donald Trump also is an ignoramus who champions many destructive policies. Since when does that disqualify anyone from the presidency? Since when does that trigger 17 New Yorker cartoons in a single issue? No, for the establishment, the problem with Trump is that he is a loose cannon. He doesn't champion all the causes that the oligarchs champion. And some of their causes he resists. For example, Trump refuses to pretend that Russia is a great enemy. That's not good for defense industry profits. Trump is in favor of Social Security. The oligarchs want all that money that is ably managed by the Social Security Administration to be put into the hands of Wall Street investment managers. You can decide which one you trust to take care of your retirement income. Trump is even in favor of preserving Medicare. He even said, "You can't have people dying in the streets." "Oh, yes, you can," say the 1%. And Cruz and Rubio and Ryan and Christie and Carly Fiorina and Jeb Bush could be depended on to help make it happen. But Trump cannot be depended on. For the establishment, that is Trump's real sin. He might not fight hard to abolish Social Security. he might not call for massive new defense spending to counter the alleged Russian threat. So the establishment desperately wants Trump stopped. But why are the entire mass media vociferously parroting this party line and nothing but? Silly question. Now you can see the actual function of the corporate-owned press in a rather dubious democracy. Noam Chomsky and Ed Herman pegged the real role of the media well in their book Manufacturing Consent. That book is a generation old, and its examples of press bias and propaganda are from the Reagan years. Well, you could read the book and look around. See how relevant Chomsky's and Herman's conclusions are to the current scene. Works for me. One last example. On April 5th, Ted Cruz managed to win the Republican primary in Wisconsin, one of the very few primaries in which he came out ahead of Trump. I read about it in both my local paper and in the New York Times. In both rags, the emphasis was on Cruz, Cruz, Cruz. Headlines about Cruz. Photographs of a triumphant Cruz. No photos of Trump. The establishment has doubts about Cruz's effectiveness, but they love his policies. So, Cruz got the big play in one of his very few primary victories. But wait, there's more. On the same day, insurgent, self-described socialist Bernie Sanders beat the establishment candidate Hillary Clinton in the Wisconsin Democratic Party primary. Beat her yet again. The New York Times mentioned this victory only in the Cruz story, and only in passing, in a third-level headline, with the details buried far back in the story. Yet another trouncing by Bernie, who came out of nowhere, of establishment favorite Clinton. Isn't that the real story here? Or at least a story as important as one of the few times Cruz came out ahead of anybody? No pictures of Bernie Sanders, though. In fact, barely a mention. In Wisconsin, on the Democrats' side, the progressive insurgent whomps the establishment candidate yet again. Okay, let's not give this any publicity. On the Republican side, the lone remaining establishment candidate narrowly beats the loose cannon challenger. There's the story, laddies. Play it up big. Trump can be defeated. The voters back the establishment. That's the party line for today. Play it up big. Print two photos of Cruz. Here's mine humble opinion. As the kid said in the classic old New Yorker cartoon, I say it's Brussels sprouts, and I say the hell with it. But enough grumbling from me. David Rovix has put out a few new albums in the past couple of years. One of these albums is called The Other Side, and a couple tracks on it I really like. This song is timely, too. We're approaching the first anniversary of the murder of clergyman and South Carolina State Senator, the Reverend Clementa Pinckney, killed June 17, 2015. Pinckney was black and a pastor of a famous black Christian church, the Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church, Emmanuel AME, in Charleston, South Carolina. Dylan Roof, a white man, was charged with the entirely unprovoked murder. There's a long and interesting history to Emmanuel AME Church. Mother Emmanuel, it is called. The church was founded by blacks, mostly by slaves, I assume, in 1816. One of its founders was the former slave Denmark Vesey. 6 years later, Vesey planned a large-scale slave revolt scheduled for June 17, 1822. The plot was betrayed to the authorities by a slave. When the authorities learned of the planned revolt, Vesey and dozens of others were rounded up. Vesey and more than 30 others were executed. An angry white mob burned down Emmanuel A.M.E. Church. Then, after Nat Turner's rebellion in 1834, Charleston banned all black churches. Emmanuel A.M.E.'s congregation met secretly until after the Civil War. Then a new church building was erected. In the 20th century, Mother Emmanuel Church continued to be a thorn in the side of the white segregation establishment in South Carolina. It was very active in the civil rights movement in the 1960s. In 1962, in a voter registration drive, the pastor and 900 others were arrested. This is the church in which, on June 17, 2015, a young white man, Dylan Roof, sat in on a Bible study class. After an hour, Roof suddenly pulled out a pistol and shot and killed the minister. Voices in his head told him to do this, he said. Nearby, on that day, on the lawn of the South Carolina State House in Charleston, the battle flag of the Confederate States of America proudly flew. So you could see the murder of the Reverend Clementa Pinckney as just another random act of violence. Or you could see it as one more page in a long and wide-ranging story. A story where whites attack uppity blacks. That's an old story in South Carolina, a story going back to Denmark Vesey and before that. And some of the story takes place right here in Mother Emmanuel Church. David Rovick's song is titled State House Lawn.
He was listening to voices talking in his head. If you grew up in America, you know exactly what they said. And with every job we lose, however bad things get, there's a black man in the White House on the TV set. And we can blame it all on him and his entire race, because they no longer know their place. You can hear the voices by the early light of dawn. You can see the flag waving on the State House lawn. He was listening to voices. You could say that he was crazy for thinking certain people are just born to be lazy. He could see it on the cop shows. They don't know right from wrong. The race war is coming, and now it won't be long. I promise it was not his original notion. If you want to start a war first, you have to set the war in motion. You can hear the voices by the early light of dawn. You can see the flag waving on the State House lawn. Said the conflict's coming soon. And he walked into the church on the 17th of June, the very date of the rebellion that never was to be, for which 35 were hanged in that very city, for which the church was burned,
for which the church was banned, for which there's been no atonement in a sick and troubled land. You can hear the voices, and by the early light of dawn, you can see the flag waving on the State House lawn. You can hear the voices, and by the early light of dawn, you can see the flag waving on the State House lawn. You can see the flag waving on the State House lawn.
David Rovick's State House Lawn, including some interesting violin by Billy Oskey in counterpoint. To hear more of Rovick's, find him in the Bandcamp website, davidrovicks.bandcamp.com. And you can find the New World Notes archive of past shows at our own website, which is newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust, thanking you for listening, advising illegitimi non carborundum, reminding you that war is not healthy for children and other living things, and hoping you'll tune in again next week. Ciao.
You can hear the voices, and by the early light of dawn, you can see the flag waving on the State House lawn. You can hear the voices, and by the early light of dawn, you can see the flag waving on the State House lawn. You can see the flag waving on the State House lawn.